Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is Schrock v. Learning Curve. Mr. Barinholtz.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. We're here today seeking reversal of the summary judgment entered against my client, Dan Schrock, after 4 years of litigation, extensive discovery, and virtually on the eve of the final pretrial conference. In dismissing the case, the district court made reversible errors of law involving misinterpretations of the Copyright Act, intertwined with the court's overlooking of material disputed issues of fact. In addition, this case presents an important question of first impression in this circuit, namely, whether photographs depicting copyrightable subject matters are derivative works under the Copyright Act. The district court's principal errors are, first, that the court misconstrued the Copyright Act to require that lawful creators of non-infringing derivative works must obtain a separate affirmative authority in order to assert their copyrights. That's wrong. Second, with regard to the question of first impression presented here, the district court erred because it found, as a matter of law, the photographs that are involved here, and in fact, all photographs that depict copyrightable objects, are derivative works, when in fact, they are not. We are urging the court to reverse on either or both of these errors. Now, assuming arguendo that the photographs at issue here are derivative works, the district court's legal error is very clear. The Copyright Act does not require a secondary affirmative authority in order to register a lawfully created derivative work.
But our case law says it does. So are you asking us to overrule Grayson and the other cases after it that so hold?
When you say our case law does, I think that Grayson has essentially been vitiated by Liu versus Price Waterhouse. So in a sense,
I don't think Liu says that. Are you saying it overruled it by implication? Which can't be done in this circuit.
Here's what I read.
Or elsewhere, as far as I know.
Here's what I read Liu as doing to Grayson. Grayson was decided on the basis of originality. That's pretty clear. Judge Posner, in writing that decision, said, we're not going to decide this case on the basis of whether or not a secondary authority was necessary. Although in dicta, he suggested it might be. That dicta has since been criticized and essentially put aside by Judge Holderman's ruling in the Liu case, both in one of his summary judgment rulings and in the ultimate ruling after the trial of the case, and in this court's decision, Judge Caney's decision in Liu in this court. I'm not sure how to characterize it as whether it was overruled or whether it was disregarded. I use the word vitiated in my brief. If this court feels that that dicta in Grayson is still good law, then perhaps this court should expressly overrule it. But that was not the holding of the case. Consequently, I cannot agree with Your Honor that that is the law of this circuit. In any event, the requirement that an additional affirmative authority be given to the creator of a derivative work in order that he or she may register that work is not found in the Copyright Act.
Let me ask you a practical question. Under your theory, if after 2 years had expired, RC2 hired another photographer to take the same kind of photos, these catalog photos, did the same thing, told them about the lighting, the distance, the shot, everything they wanted, would Mr. Schrock be able to prevent RC2 from using the other photographer's photographs?
No, I don't believe so. Not unless, and the Etzhoken case makes very clear, as does Gen 2 case, that only virtually identical copying could be prevented. Consequently, in most instances, what you're saying would not be available to Mr. Schrock based upon the law. And in fact, that's not what he's here to seek redress for. He's seeking redress for identical copying. The identical copying, of course, occurs when RC2 goes outside the scope of the license using the exact same photograph.
Well, did you ever think about bringing a breach of contract claim?
No, we did not. We characterized our lawsuit as the violation of a license. In any event, the district court held that Schrock unquestionably had authority to create the photographs. The district court stated it was unquestionable that RC2 retain and engage the services of Mr. Schrock to create these works, assuming they're derivatives. But that's all he needed under the Copyright Act to own the copyright in the derivative works. So the district court, in our case, erred in finding that Schrock needed to do something more in order to obtain copyright in the photos.
Other than the medium, what's different between the toys at issue, the Thomas the Tank Engine toys, and the photographs? I mean, these are pure product photos. There's nothing else in them. So other than the fact that the toys themselves, the original works, are three-dimensional and the photo is two-dimensional, what's the difference between the two?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
This goes to the originality question. Even if the district court's analysis on derivative works, et cetera, was wrong, you still have an originality burden to carry here.
Ultimately, in the trial court, were you to reverse and send it back down?
Well, no, we can consider that.
We can affirm
on other grounds, and the grounds have been explicitly argued by the defendants here, so it doesn't have to go back
on
that question.
Not all of the underlying works are in the record. So when you say they depict Thomas Toys, I think they depict...
Well, we don't need every single original work and every single photograph in the record to rule on this. Well, we have a representative sample, don't we?
We do, but if you look at some of the ones attached to our brief, you'll see that numerous of the photos are complex setups that are on the fronts of boxes. They're not just a single object, which is in a photograph. So there are various differences that are important to the originality argument.
But all the items in the setup are copyrighted, right? They're all the toys.
They are not. We suggest that they are not. We argued in the trial court, in our summary judgment papers, that copyright registrations, which were attached to an affidavit by Mr. Richard Glankler, who was the HIT vice president of licensing, only went to literary works and works of the performing arts. There were no registrations in the record for the toys as copyrightable objects. If you're going to register a three-dimensional object, it's got to be registered with the Copyright Office as a three-dimensional sculptural work. There are no such registrations. The defendants are not entitled to any presumption that the toys are themselves copyrightable. The fact that there's a performing arts registration or a work of a literary work registration does not suffice. And beyond that, if they felt that it did suffice, they didn't attach any of the deposits that were made with the copyright registrations. So we really don't know, and I don't think it's fair to burden Schrock with a presumption that doesn't exist. That went to our argument that the defendants violated Rule 56E under the summary judgment provisions of the federal rules. But to answer Your Honor's question, the difference is the underlying subject matter is a three-dimensional sculptural work. The photograph is a separate form of authorship. And that's another reason why we believe the district court erred. We argued heavily below that the Copyright Office's own internal policy manual, called the Compendium of Copyright Office Practices, states clearly that the thing that is depicted in the photograph is not a copyrightable element. The photographic authorship is a separate thing. It's not based on the thing that is depicted. That is what the Copyright Office holds. Consequently, with regard to whether or not these are derivative works, the court erred because it completely overlooked the compendium. There is nothing whatsoever, even though we argued it and cited it below, there is nothing whatsoever in the district court's opinion saying that, well, I've looked at the compendium, I've looked at the Copyright Office's own policies as to what they determine to be relevant or not for registration, and I find that it doesn't apply for reasons X, Y, and Z. No, the court simply overlooked it.
So you mentioned that some of these toys were placed on boxes, but that was at the request. I mean, that was not something that he designed to put on boxes. That was so it would be in sync with the catalog, and that was requested, just like lighting right there. You can't, or can you point to photographs that he, you know, set up on his own without consulting with the manufacturer?
If you look at our exhibits G
and
H to the plaintiff's brief, you'll see some of the variations of how the setups were arranged.
But weren't those variations, what I'm saying, weren't they at the request of Learning Curve?
As a general proposition, they were. But there was never any, I think what Your Honor is getting to is whether or not they directed his activities.
Right.
That would fall more into a work made for hire analysis. There was never any effort by the defendants to say that this was work made for hire. They licensed this work from him. His invoices embody terms of those licenses. Work made for hire was not an issue in the case. Consequently, the extent to which they may have made general suggestions, while interesting, is not particularly relevant. And with regard to another argument that they've abandoned on appeal and which the district court did deal with but felt that they overreached on was the joint works argument. They argued that, there's a copyright. Perhaps we own part of it because we contributed copyrightable authorship as well as the photographer. The district court correctly found that they had overreached in that regard. And there is no evidence in the briefs that they've sought to continue on with that argument. Section 102A of the Copyright Act provides that the copyright protection in the derivative work subsists from the moment of fixation for lawful original works. This is true for derivatives and non-derivatives. Under the 1976 Act, fixation is the point at which copyright attaches. Fixation does not merely trigger some inchoate potential, which requires some further permission to register works of authorship, whether they're derivative or not. The copyright vests in the derivative work creator by operation of law within the scope of the grant to create the work. In other words, you don't need to seek permission for an act which you are already legally authorized to do. When you pay for your groceries and pick up the bag, you don't need to ask permission to leave the store. The district court misconstrued Grayson to require this affirmative authority, and that reliance was misplaced. With regard to whether the photographs are to be determined to be derivative works or not, if Your Honors determine that the photographs are not derivative works, then the entire rest of the district court's decision goes out the window. We maintain that photographs are not derivative works for a number of reasons. First of all, they are not listed in the statute as derivative works. either in the Section 101 definitional section or Section 103 of the Act. That's not the be-all and end-all, but it's certainly a starting point. From there, we can see that no legislative history suggests that photographs are meant to be derivative works. In fact, photographs are a separate form of authorship that do not, in the terms of the definition, recast, transform, or adapt the underlying work. No publication of the Copyright Office, no circular, no regulation, no application form, no instruction on how to fill out the applications, or any other document that is promulgated by the Copyright Office suggests that photographs are derivative works. I've already discussed the compendium, which in the words of Judge Castillo, in a case that we cited below, Natkin and Green versus Winfrey, the compendium, which deserves great deference, states that photographic authorship does not depend on the nature of the thing depicted or the subject matter of the photograph. These are not regarded as copyrightable elements. In addition, no court of appeals authority holds that photographs are derivative works. In addition, substantial recent district court authority holds that photographs are not derivative works. That's the SHL imaging case, the Latimer versus Roaring Toys case, and numerous cases from around the nation, including this court's Schiller and Schmidt versus Nordisco. Now, there was no absolute discussion of whether those photos in the Schiller and Schmidt case were derivative works, but there was no analysis of whether that was going to get in the way of this court affording protection for those works. And finally, Professor Patry, one of the more respected commentators along with Nimmer and Goldstein, has stated flatly in his 2007 treatise, photographs of copyrightable objects are not derivative works. I see that my rebuttal time is, and I'll reserve that.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Mr. Furton.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, the decision of the District Court should be affirmed for two reasons. First, these works are derivative works, and there's no question that the plaintiff lacked authority to register a copyright in them. Secondly, these works are not original as required under the Constitution. As to the first, counsel mentioned a few moments ago that it's a question of first impression in this district as to whether or not photographs are derivative works. I disagree. I believe this court has mentioned photographs being derivative works on several occasions. Recently in the Thai case in 2002, in the Saturday Evening Post case, and most importantly and most analogously in the Grayson case, this court specifically said paintings are derivative works. And if you read Section 102, paintings are not mentioned. I'm sorry, Section 101, defining derivative works. Section 101 has a non-exhaustive list. It includes musical arrangements, fictionalizations, art reproductions. It doesn't specifically say paintings. It doesn't specifically say photographs either. It simply says that a work is based upon one or more pre-existing work. That is, and it gives certain examples, and then goes on to say, or any other form in which a work may be recast, transformed, or adapted. That's what the photographs did here. They recast, they transformed, they adapted the toys that are depicted in the pictures. These photographs were based upon toys. That's all there is. There's nothing conceptually separable about these photographs. They are toys, rendered in two dimensions instead of three.
What is the nature of the copyright in these toys?
The nature of the copyright is the toys are themselves copyrightable objects, copyrightable sculptures under Section 102. They constitute copyrightable subject matter. HIT Entertainment owns hundreds of copyrights on many different works. The particular works at issue here, these toys, there isn't a registration for every single one of them. They are copyrightable, meaning if we sought a registration, we could obtain a registration as a sculpture. So the copyrightable nature of these toys was not challenged, is not challenged. The plaintiff has never pointed to a particular photograph and said, see, look at this photograph. It has this, this, and this in it, and those are not copyrightable. That's not really at issue in this case. The real question is whether or not this court, like the district court, should follow the Grayson decision, and I believe it should, not only because it is the law of this case, of this court, but because it makes perfect sense.
What about counsel's argument that Lew somehow by implication abrogates Grayson?
I actually believe that Lew embraces Grayson and embraces the holding of Grayson, that is, that authority to copyright is different from authority to create a derivative work, to a license allowing one to do that which would otherwise be prohibited under the Copyright Act. And the reason is that derivative works, it is the most powerful of the exclusive rights given to a copyright holder. The right to be the exclusive person in control of reproductions, performance, display, those are somewhat limited. But the power to create derivative works is enormous. It means that you can create lunchboxes, backpacks, posters, movies, films. Only the mind sets the limits on what you can create with a derivative work. There's no reason a company like Hit Entertainment that owns the rights to Thomas and other children's properties would grant someone like a photographer the right to control the visual imagery associated with Thomas the Tank Engine. We wouldn't. It was recognized in the Thai case where there were photographs of Beanie Babies. It was recognized in the ERG case out of the Ninth Circuit involving costumes of cartoon characters.
Actually, in the Thai case, I think it was conceded that the photographs were derivative works and not contested. So that's not really a holding.
I agree, Your Honor. And if I misstated it to be a holding, I apologize. I believe, though, the court was certainly influenced by the fact that the defendant in that case, who was represented by Professor Patry, that the defendant conceded that the photographs were derivative works. However, I believe the court embraced that notion and would have found that way anyways. And in fact, the discussion in many ways reveals a conviction by the court that they are in fact.
Well, that may be true, but that doesn't make it a holding.
And
I am wondering whether this circuit is out of step with the rest of the country in this regard.
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Just on the photography question, but on this issue of derivative works requiring permission.
I don't think so. And in that regard, I would point you to the Durham case out of the Second Circuit, which involved the wind-up plastic toys that were prototypical Mickey Mouse, Pluto, and Donald.
Right.
And the ERG case out of the Ninth Circuit involving costumes. Each of these cases found that the creators, that is, the artisans, the person who sculpted the toy, the person who sewed the costume, was not entitled to a copyright because granting him a copyright would essentially interfere with the rights of the underlying rights owner.
Didn't Durham really turn more on the originality question?
It did. And, you know, we talk about these two issues in this case as authority to copyright and originality as two separate issues. But in many ways, they coalesce. They come together in the sense that the reason you shouldn't grant Mr. Schrock copyrights is twofold. One is you shouldn't allow him to become an owner of a copyright, which would then give him the exclusive right to control reproduction and creation of derivative works. And two, because his work product is not substantially different from the work product of the underlying rights owner, Hit Entertainment.
Mr. Furton, how did the photograph recast, transform, or adapt the authorship in the copyright? What did the photograph do?
The photograph transformed a two-dimensional object into three dimensions.
Well, that's true of every photograph, right?
I suppose, yes. It rendered in another medium the visual imagery. And it's that visual imagery that is the essence of our business. If you think of it from our perspective, Hit Entertainment is in the derivative works business. All we do is license our existing catalog and authorize the creation of new things, lunchboxes, posters. Each one of those is a derivative work of the underlying properties. And thus,
so your ability to sell photographs of lunchboxes, I don't know if that's done, what you're speaking to. Right?
Yes, exactly. Our ability to create a poster that a child might put in his room that has Thomas smiling at him or what have you is impaired. And that's the issue here is that, and it was recognized in the Thai case, that this is a commercial right that my client may well need to exploit in the future. And if we recognize Mr. Schrock as having control over this, now he can sue us in the future when we create a photograph that looks too much like his. When we create a poster or a lunchbox emblazoned with a picture of Thomas that he considers to be substantially similar. And remember, we'll have access to his photographs, and just inherently they're going to look very similar because the function of the photograph is to convey Thomas, is to convey the underlying visual imagery.
Why did you attempt to have Mr. Schrock sign a work-for-hire agreement if the previous photos were not copyrightable?
Well, I think the answer is that as a matter of best practices, it always makes sense to always get written agreements from anybody anywhere near the creative process. It just eliminates any ambiguity and gives you then the ability to prevail at motion to dismiss stage as opposed to a summary judgment stage. It's a matter of industry practices. I don't think any more really needs to be said about why a company would do that. I think
there's no inference, no negative inference we should draw. Because, I mean, if it's a best practice, that should have been entered into initially.
Yeah, I don't think any negative inference should be drawn by a company seeking to manage its litigation exposures. I mean, it's almost like a settlement, if you will, drawing an inference from it. Well, you offered to pay him certain dollar amounts. Maybe we should take that into account because that implies that he had a valid claim against you. I don't think that would be appropriate either. Your Honor, I see that the white light is on. I'd like to give Mr. Hansen an opportunity.
Of course. Thank you, Mr. Hansen.
May it please the Court, I'm David Hansen. I represent Learning Curve International, RC2 Brands, and RC2 Corporation, the RC2 defendants. Clearly, RC2, the RC2 defendants, join in HIT Entertainment's arguments and its briefing and urge this Court to affirm the District Court for the same reasons. The defendant appellees decided to divide time in the way we have so that RC2 may respond directly to questions the Court may have that may be more specific to RC2. And if I may just take one, Your Honor's last question, for example, was probably best answered by me because it was, after all, Learning Curve that sought to have Mr. Schrock sign that document. Mr. Ferdinand adequately answered the question. There's just an additional point to make, and that was in the nature of best practice, but the timeline is in the record. That was after Learning Curve had been acquired by new management. And new management, RC2 Brands, had other practices, and it was in the nature of doing what we've done in this half of the business. Let's get it done in this half of the business. Not an admission that it needed to be done. And that's even putting aside, as we say in our brief, whether there's a 407 subsequent remedial measure argument, that should not be. No inference should be drawn on appeal as to the meaning of that. But continuing, some other points that RC2 might make in the limited time that we have, it goes to this question of the other brands. Appropriately, the conversation thus far has been focused on Thomas because HIT is the licensor and owner of those properties. At issue in this case, stated plainly, Judge Shader's opinion should be affirmed, as do all brands, all alleged works in this case. There are others. They're in the briefs, Lamaze, Eden for a time, Madeline, Small Miracles, even there was in the time Lionel, the trains at one point, they're no longer in the case. The point there is that I wish to stress is that copyrightability is the issue when looking at the subjects of those works, not copyright registration. The question for the Court is not does the record contain a copyright registration that the licensor of each of those properties obtained. That's not it. It's, was it copyrightable subject matter? And to answer that question, yes. The court, as Your Honor put it, need look at a representative sample. There are ample samples in the briefs. There's even in the record a CD-ROM containing dozens and dozens of images. But in the briefs themselves, at the appendices, Appendix B to the red brief, principal brief, shows some Madeline toys. Clearly, Madeline, there's another universe out there, that, like the Thomas universe, that is the Madeline universe. Madeline, a beloved character, certainly a copyrightable set of characters with Madeline and her band of friends, much like Thomas. Likewise, Lamaze, the blue brief that counsel referred to contains at tab H and tab, well, actually, first tab G, a good sample photograph of one of the Lamaze toys. I believe that is Buzz the Bug. And the point is, Buzz does not need to have a copyright registration. The point is, in looking at the plush, I guess that's a mobile or a crib hanging toy, is that copyrightable subject matter, that sculpture or that soft toy? Clearly, it passes the threshold for originality under the Copyright Act and would be copyrightable subject matter. Simply put, there is no issue in this case. The plaintiff has not identified a work wherein the subject of the photo is not copyrightable. Had opportunity to do that in the statement of proposed statement of undisputed facts. It was put at issue and it was not refuted. There was not a selection out of the hundreds, if not thousands, of works of a photograph where the subject matter was not copyrightable. As is the nature of an appellee, we will not have a rebuttal. And so I don't know whether in the remaining time that Mr. Schrock's counsel has, he will address the implied license argument. It has not been mentioned thus far before you. We are content to rest on the briefs. It's amply set forth in the briefs. And for those reasons, it is an alternative ground on which this court could affirm. The one point I wish to make about the implied license defense is that it is reached. The court reaches that issue as an alternative. It is not an admission, as the reply brief or the gray brief suggests. It's not an admission that the parties recognized that there was a license. It was instead an implied license. It's reached only if this court first decides that the subject alleged works meet the originality threshold, and only if this court decides the second threshold is met, and that is that it overcomes the Grayson derivative works issue. It's only then that the court need look at whether, because it's only then that Mr. Schrock would be a copyright holder and have the power to wield a copyright against the defendants. So it's only then you look to, well, what did the parties agree by their conduct? What was implied in their conduct? And the nature, which is set forth in the briefs, the nature of this transaction, this economic deal that these parties struck, was this skilled photographer, this skilled artisan, would give transparencies over to the party that would then scan them, use them as they saw fit, and would be paid up front, and was paid up front, for that transaction. For all those reasons, I see my time has expired. For all those reasons, RC2 joins in HIT in urging this court to affirm the district court. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hansen. Mr. Barinholtz?
Most of the cases cited by the defendants are what I would call substantial similarity cases. All Mr. Schrock wants to do is prevent the unfair and improper exploitation of the licenses that he granted as a result of RC2, including HIT, going beyond the scope of the terms of those licenses. With regard to whether all of the works at issue here are copyrightable, I would refer Your Honors to the fifth page in from the back of the RC2 brief. It's a 2002 catalog titled page 206. And likewise, in the Appendix B of the RC2 brief, the third page in from the front, it's entitled 2002 Catalog, page 56. The exhibit in the HIT brief shows Mr. Schrock circled two photographs of table frames. Those are utilitarian objects. They're not subject to copyright. Therefore, they don't fall within the analysis that the district court rendered. Because all the parties here agree that it has to be a copyrightable subject matter in order for the photograph to be a derivative work, if it was to be a derivative work, which we don't agree with. In the RC2 catalog, Exhibit B, third page in, you'll see a photograph circled. It's two items of clothing. Items of wearing apparel are utilitarian articles. They're not subject to copyright. Those photographs are not derivative works. Our main argument with regard to originality is you've got to have the entire record. You can't make a blanket decision that because some works appear to be subject to copyright protection, you're going to make a broad brush decision that all of the toys at issue and all of the objects and all of the items of clothing are copyrightable, and therefore, if you decide that photographs are derivative works, that the photos are derivatives. They're not. That requires an item-by-item analysis. It would be extremely unfair for the court to make a blanket decision in that regard. I think it was aptly noted that the photographic authorship does not recast, transform, or adapt the underlying object which it depicts. It merely depicts it. I strongly rest on the SHL versus Artisan House case and Judge Moody's further analysis in the Latimer versus Roaring Toys case and Professor Patry's flat-out statement that just because the photograph depicts an object doesn't mean that it recasts, transforms, or adapts it. It merely depicts it. Judge Williams pointing out that the photography agreement, what would be the rationale for having a photography agreement, which was essentially a work-made-for-hire agreement? The agreement is in the record. It's not attached to the briefs, but it was attached to our exhibits in the summary judgment papers, attached to the plaintiff's affidavit, which was docket number 134. And I believe the photography agreement was the affidavit's exhibit A3. It covers all the bases, but it wasn't submitted until after the job basically was over, a 4.5-year period. If they intended to own the work from the beginning, they would have given it to him before he started, not at the very end when they realized they perhaps had done something they shouldn't have done. And all of that flies in the face of the implied license concept. If I see my time is done. If
you may conclude your thought.
The implied license concept flies straight in the face of the notion that there was no copyright, whether it's implied, express, or not. A license implies there's something to be licensed. There was a copyright. They knew that Mr. Schrock owned the copyrights in the photos. They knew they needed a license. They, in fact, told him what they needed in terms of usage rights. He granted those rights. They exceeded them.
Thank you, Mr. Barinholtz.
Thank you.
Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to